CBS News. I'm Hartley Carnes. This is just in to CBS from the White House. The president plans to make a late-night statement tonight. The subject, however, has not been announced. I know there's not much to go on, but usually such an announcement precedes something pretty important. We'll have it for you as soon as we know what it is. This is a CBS News special report. I'm Hartley Carnes. CBS News has learned Osama bin Laden is dead. This is a headline we have waited a long time to be able to report, and we get the information from Stephen Hadley, the former National Security Advisor to President Bush, who has just told CBS News by telephone that he has it authoritatively, this is a quote from the White House, that bin Laden has been killed. We are joined now by Jerry Van Dyke, CBS News Afghanistan analyst. We also have CBS News White House correspondent Peter Mayer here. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland, Army colonel retired, is here. And so is Pamela Falk, who is our foreign affairs consultant here at CBS News. Let's start with Jerry Van Dyke, because, Jerry, you were the first, I think, to pick up the phone and call us and tell us that something was up tonight.
Yes, I began to hear this from Peshawar, actually, from Pakistani journalists, that something big had happened. And they told me of a report of a helicopter crash in Pakistan.
Terry McGovern lost her mother, Anne, on 9/11. You got to just tell us what you're feeling.
You know, I'm feeling actually tremendously relieved. I'm very, very happy to hear that this has finally happened.
The president now walking down that hallway, and we are about to hear from President Barack Obama on the killing of Osama bin Laden. Here's the president.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Howard Arenstein. Several thousand demonstrators gathered outside the White House chanting USA, USA.
Right now there are several thousand, mostly young revelers on Pennsylvania Avenue. They're waving flags. Some are up in the trees waving flags. You can hear people running down the street towards Ground Zero chanting, we got him, we got him.
I'm Steve Knight at Ground Zero.
USA!
People started gathering here moments after word of the killing first leaked out. By the middle of the night, the jubilant crowd had grown to several hundred. One man's call for a moment of respect for the victims of 9/11 lasted just a few seconds before the thrill of celebration took over.
This man was not far away when the Navy SEAL team carried out the raid in Pakistan.
A lot of gunfire and explosions.
Gunfire and explosions north of Pakistan's capital, and now questions about what the Islamabad government may have known. CBS's Sal Ahmed is there.
Is the fact that he was killed almost 100 yards from one of Pakistan's biggest military academy, which puts suspicions back on the government and the establishment here that they were perhaps keeping him up there. Nobody really thought that he would be so close to one of the more modern liberal cities of the country.
I have spoken to officials from the special operations side to counterterrorism. Everybody that you can talk to says there's no way the Pakistanis didn't know about this.
John Cartier, like thousands of 9/11 families, commemorates the day every year.
I've been waiting for this for almost 10 years.
He shook hands with President Bush at Ground Zero on the one-year anniversary. He liked to shake the hand of those Navy SEALs who took out the most wanted man in the world.
They should know that killing that piece of crap was a job well done.
I'm Vicky Barker in Cairo. Lines of protesters applauding and cheering new arrivals to Tahrir Square. Women leading chants that men follow. Bankers in business suits embracing rural Muslim clerics in threadbare robes. These Egyptians are experiencing the fall of their own Berlin Wall, the wall of fear erected by a state that penalizes those who speak their minds. Listen to this man, a tour operator.
I always had my own political views, but I kept myself silent and I worked in tourism because I was afraid.
A Molotov cocktail just arced through the air to cheers from the crowds on the pro-Mubarak side. It's now burning in the street just outside Tahrir Square. There goes another one, landing right next to a car.
I'm Robert Berger at Tahrir Square in Cairo, where there is a sea of humanity and a sea of Egyptian flags.
Speakers have called on the people to protect the revolution.
From jubilation to determination, President Mubarak's latest rejection of the protesters' demands seems only to have brought more Egyptians into the streets today. Tahrir Square, just one of many pro-democracy protests called across Egypt, attracting protesters from across Egyptian society.
CBS News, I'm Vicky Barker in Cairo.
President Mohammed Hosni Mubarak has decided to waive the office of the President of the Republic.
The scream they heard around the world, the moment hundreds of thousands of Egyptians in Liberation Square realized they had won. 18 days of people power toppling one of the Middle East's most entrenched police states. CBS's Harry Smith was in Tahrir Square.
Now they've achieved their goal, and the feeling here is almost disbelief. A man I was talking to who spoke some English came over and kissed me, and he said, thank you, thank you, thank you.
CBS News, I'm Frank Sedapani. The Libyan rebels and forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi are slugging it out in the streets of Tripoli. A short time ago, CBS News correspondent Barry Peterson gave us a first-hand account of the fighting near Gaddafi's besieged compound.
That's heavy machine gun fire, you can tell. Very heavy machine gun fire. And every time it happens, the rebels who are here cheer. You can hear them cheering. They're like waiting for their turn to get into the battle.
The pro-Gaddafi forces have started beating up the protesters. They've been taking the sticks that they've been using for their murders, and now shots have rung out.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Hartley Carnes. Libyan rebels are claiming victory and are inside Muammar Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli.
So we're walking in. This is the first time the people of Libya have seen the inside of this compound.
CBS's Barry Peterson is also inside of what is no bunker. This is a large complex.
This is the symbolic victory. This is winning. They have taken Gaddafi's stronghold.
CBS News, I'm Frank Sedapani. Breaking news from Libya. Libya's information minister says Muammar Gaddafi was killed.
Well, complete and utter chaos, as you can imagine, but tremendous celebration here, of course, because these men have been fighting, many of them, for 8 months. This is the day they've waited for. This is the day they have fought for. This is the day their colleagues have been wounded and killed for, and now they're absolutely over the world with joy.
In Bahrain, the government's detained six opposition activists and has widened the scope of its martial law crackdown. CBS's Tula Vlahu says it hasn't stopped the protests.
These are clashes now. There's martial law in this. You heard that. There's martial law. Regardless of that, the protesters are out. They're defying the police.
CBS's Alan Pizzi's at the hospital where he's seen many wounded.
The triage area in the main hospital where I am now is a scene of chaos. There are people pushing and shoving in every direction. Nurses running through holding bags of plasma. Doctors bent over. Patients on stretchers who've been wheeled in. There's a couple of men mopping up blood on the floor.
The situation in Bahrain got more ugly today. CBS News reporter Tula Vlahu was covering clashes between riot police and protesters when police chased her car, firing pellets. Vlahu and her driver were sheltered by a local family, and the police finally withdrew when the U.S. Embassy intervened.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jim Taylor. Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords shot today at a public event in Tucson.
A man stood up in the crowd and then opened fire.
That's CBS News producer Pat Milton at University Hospital. Dr. Peter Reed.
We have received 10 patients. Of those, one died. We have 5 patients in critical conditions, and we currently have 5 patients in the operating room.
The gunman began just spraying everybody at point-blank range. It wasn't like he was, picking people out. He just began shooting at everybody who was close to him.
CBS News, I'm Steve Futterman, live in Tucson, Arizona.
We always hear things on the news about other places, but when it's right here in Tucson, it's really hard to believe that it's happened.
The reaction from a woman after a shooting that has left 6 dead and 13 others wounded.
CBS's Steve Futterman visited her Tucson office and now joins us live.
And Tom, a makeshift vigil has been put up in front of Congresswoman Giffords' office. There's been a nonstop stream of people coming by, some with flowers, others with candles, almost everyone with prayers for her recovery.
I can't believe something like this would happen. I actually work really close to the Safeway.
CBS News. I'm Jim Shenaby. A major earthquake has struck Japan, magnitude 8.8. It hit along the northeast coast, and there are some reports of injuries and a 13-foot tsunami.
The Pacific is in an expanding tsunami watch, and we are still evaluating the situation to see how big the risk is.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jim Shenaby. It has fast become a major disaster in Japan today, an 8.9 earthquake that struck the northern coast of Honshu, Japan's main island.
Our apartment just felt like it moved from side to side.
Scenes of destruction from the rolling 33-foot-tall tsunami are reminiscent of the surge that hit Indonesia back in 2004. Reporter Lucy Kraft in Tokyo.
We had these very dramatic scenes of cars that were parked at a fish market that was right on a wharf near the epicenter. A whole parking lot full of cars washed into the sea.
CBS News, I'm Frank Setapani. Breaking news from Japan. There's been a dramatic jump in the death toll from a powerful earthquake and tsunami on the main island of Honshu. Authorities now say as many as 300 bodies have been found in Sendai City along Japan's northeast coast. 88 people are confirmed dead.
Landline, cell phone, it doesn't matter. It's been almost impossible to get through to people in Sendai. I know this myself because I have a son there who goes to school. We haven't been able to reach him since before the earthquake started.
CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman, live in Tokyo. Japan's biggest challenge since the Second World War. That's what Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan said here tonight as he addressed the nation.
In the 65 years after the end of World War II, this is the toughest, the most difficult crisis for Japan in that period.
The official death toll is now over 1,200, but some officials are saying there could be 10,000 people dead in one state alone. CBS's Harry Smith is in the city of Minami Sanrikuchu.
On the top of this debris pile, a family album, school pictures, a father and son, brothers together, schoolmates, and you wonder whoever this belonged to, whether or not they're still alive.
Greatest concern now, the damaged nuclear power plants in Fukushima, officials scurrying to avoid meltdown. Here's CBS's Celia Hatton.
I'm at Fukushima Airport right now. It's one of the only places in the region with electricity and a mobile phone connection. Now, many are sleeping here tonight. They're desperate to escape this area. Whole families are camped out on the floor here, many with their pets and whatever they could grab from their homes.
People here are lined up waiting for gasoline. The line wraps around the block. Some of these people have been here for half a day, and they don't even know if the gas station is going to open or not.
Japan's nuclear crisis. They've got to keep that reactor core covered with water, or they won't save it.
Desperate days for quake and tsunami survivors.
I don't have electricity. I don't have anything at all in my home. All I can do is wait.
Good morning. I'm Steve Kathan.
And I'm Harry Smith in Tokyo with the CBS World News Roundup. Japan's nuclear crisis is in the hands of 50 brave men. The workers at the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant risking their own lives to try to contain the radiation at the earthquake-damaged reactors and prevent a disaster. Nuclear safety expert Cham Dallas, a CBS News consultant, has been in touch with someone who has spoken to one of the workers.
His friend told him that he was not afraid to die, that that was his job.
I'm Barry Bagnato at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. State Radiation Director Dave Allard insists nuclear plants here are safe. Japan's disaster?
I think this is an extremely unique situation.
But Eric Epstein, head of TMI Alert, sees similarities in the responses here and there.
At TMI, like Chernobyl, now Japan, the industry and the government, I don't think have been frank or forthright with information.
The threat of radiation exposure is never far from the minds of U.S. forces at the front of America's military aid mission on board the USS Essex. But it doesn't stop their work.
Feels great. I'm glad I'm actually doing something that counts, helping people in need.
Their jobs may get harder as more and more crews carry supplies into the hardest hit areas.
We're here to help the Japanese people, and that's what we're going to do.
Charlie Daggett of CBS News on board the USS Essex in Japan.
The government has warned that iodine levels are high in tap water, high for babies 12 months and under, so parents are being told not to give those kids tap water. Correspondent Steve Futterman says the word traveled quickly.
This is the supermarket I go to every day here in Tokyo. Now, this morning when I was here, they had the liter and 2-liter containers of bottled water. Now, an hour after the announcement, the bottles are all gone, all sold out at this supermarket.
At Tokyo's famous fish market, water bubbles in empty tanks. Fear of radioactive contamination has driven sales down more than 50%. Exports down far more than that, with many foreign customers refusing to have anything to do with Japanese fish.
That's my Japanese cell phone giving me an alert. It says that we're about to have an aftershock. And now, yes, it's beginning to happen. We can feel a slight aftershock here. The building, the hotel I'm in right now, going back and forth.
I'm Vicky Barker in Sendai, Japan. Three generations of Okubo Hiroko's family used to live under one roof in Sendai. Now, home is some blankets spread on the floor of a classroom shared with her family and several dozen neighbors.
We are lucky because we are a small group and we've known each other a long time. The people upstairs, they are from a different area and they are starting to have trouble getting along.
Across the tsunami zone, work's begun on temporary housing. But with half a million people affected, Mrs. Hiroko and her family may be living in that classroom for months.
Glee club practice at a Japanese middle school, the veneer of normality. But this is the heart of the tsunami zone. These children have seen terrible things.
Children internalize trauma, and often feelings of guilt come along with the trauma.
Paul Dudley, Heart of Mercy Corps, the U.S. aid group helping Japanese children with expertise it gained working with American children after 9/11. Vicky Barker, CBS News, Sendai, Japan.
3 months after the deadly earthquake and tsunami, CBS's Lucy Kraft has gone back to the area near the country's damaged nuclear plant, where some worried families are still at a crossroads.
That's the sound of radiation in the garden of Fukushima resident Akiko Murakami. The mother of four sons, ages 12 to 21, she is agonizing over whether to pack up her kids and move.
It's always in my mind. I'm always worried about my kids. I'm always thinking about whether I should leave here or not. I'm always thinking about that.
An estimated several thousand city residents have fled already. Lucy Kraft, CBS News, Fukushima City.
I'm Peter King, CBS News in Port-au-Prince. It's earthquake plus 1 year in Haiti. Wednesday's observances shut down most of Port-au-Prince. As many Haitians went to church or huge outdoor services like this one at a park that's now a huge tent city right next to the presidential palace.
They're talking about how many people who's happy they're still alive today. And then they clap their hands.
And now you hear applause. Amanda Knox gets very emotional, puts her hand to her face, begins to cry. What a moment for her. Her mother begins to tear up.
I'm Heather Bosch in Joplin, Missouri. Relentless storms have made the search through the tornado-ravaged city difficult.
I work at K-9.
Cassville Chief Dana Kummerlore.
You always hope for a rescue.
Any idea how many people might be out here?
I have not heard an official number.
Does that affect the dog's ability to search?
Yes, it does. In fact, one of the things about searching is that you cause no harm.
That means no harm to police dogs and other officers. They had to cut this search short.
There are 18 or 19 people huddled inside this store. No electricity, no way of knowing just how bad it was about to get. People scream and pray. And say what they fear could be their last words.
I love everyone. I love everyone, man.
Yeah.
I love you.
Then it's finally over.
In the 2500 block of Murphy Street, everything that once was is gone.
Are you just putting these in the truck, Mom?
For Rhonda Hall, that means the house she grew up in is now just a pile of broken wood and memories.
I grew up in this house. My dad grew up in this house. And to think it's all gone, and where do you go from there, you know?
He walks through his home, or what's left of it.
I saved some of my library, but most of it's damp.
David Howard's home is a skeleton riddled with damp insulation and muck. Family and friends try to find what's salvageable. What is that, or what was that?
That's a tin siding and all kinds of stuff.
Wife Barbara vows they'll clean up.
And we're going to rebuild.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, Joplin, Missouri. 6 months after a tornado destroyed their home, Carrie Cook and her two young sons cut a ribbon in front of their new house with help from Habitat for Humanity.
Everyone's come together and blessed us with a house. Oh, I mean,
We are just so
This
lucky.
Is awesome.
The city of Joplin lost 7,500 homes in the May tornado. About 500 families are still in temporary housing. Mayor Mike Woolston says this will take time.
Take closer to a year and a half, potentially 2 years, to get most of our housing stock back.
But every day there's progress.
I know. We have a lot to be thankful for.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, Joplin, Missouri.
We begin a week-long look at the deadly famine in the Horn of Africa. Here's CBS's Erica Hill.
From the wails of children to the desperate faces of their parents, life in a refugee camp is often far from the expectations of those who risk their lives to come here.
These are the new arrivals. You know them by the faces dusted with the desert and by the eyes that have seen too much. Medina Ali was one of those waiting to be admitted to the camp.
How long were you walking?
17 days.
And how many children do you have with you?
Four children.
Four children. Did all of your children survive the journey?
One boy died on the way.
Chris Tridy is with the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF.
There is a huge population in the outskirts of the camps here that are not getting the services that they need, just because the rate of influx is so high.
Never in modern times has Texas been stripped of moisture like it is now. Fetching bags of feed for a flatbed pickup means the livestock live for now.
March, April, and May, it always rains. It didn't this year.
You can find cattle surrounded by dust and dirt, nibbling at what little remains. Matthew Minky sells feed. That, he's moving. The other half of his business is ruined.
I have four fertilizer trucks, and we have done about 5% of the normal business that we would do in that three-month period.
The land so sunbaked, even the weeds won't grow. August Skamenka, CBS News, Hempstead, Texas.
This is a CBS News special report, Tragedy in Tucson. I'm Dan Raviv, and in the minutes ahead, we'll bring you up to date on the carnage caused by a killer in Tucson, Arizona, alleged to be Jared Lee Loughner, age 22. This is a CBS News special report, Revolution in Egypt. I'm Dan Raviv. When it happened fast. A 30-second announcement on state-run television in Egypt. It was Vice President Omar Suleiman who got that job just 2 weeks ago, talking about his boss, his close colleague, President Hosni Mubarak. This is a CBS News special report. An earthquake, a tsunami, and now a nuclear crisis in Japan. I'm Dan Raviv, CBS News. In the minutes ahead, we'll report in depth on what happened in Japan, what may happen next, and how it affects us.
CBS News special report, the killing of Osama bin Laden. I'm Sam Litzinger. He was the most wanted, for some the most feared, for many the most hated man in the world. And now, as President Obama announced to the world, Osama bin Laden is dead.
I think we can all agree this is a good day for America.
This is a CBS News special report marking the 10th anniversary of 9/11.
Saw the plane hit the building. I can't say anything.
10 years later, CBS News looks back on the changes still affecting all of us.
It was a nightmare. Couldn't see. Everything was totally black. We were just walking, hoping to find daylight.
I have never seen the building, so I'm trying to picture what they looked like when they were up.
Remembering the day we will never forget.
I can hear you. And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And looking to the future.
I was just thinking to myself that it's torn down, but it's coming back.
This is CBS News special coverage. 9/11, America remembers.
I'm Dan Raviv, and in this special broadcast, the CBS News team will take you back to that terrible day. We'll remind you of what's happened since then. And we'll discuss how the attack inside America still impacts how we live now.
I'm Heather Bosch at the World Trade Center. Where the Twin Towers collapsed into the ground, you now hear construction.
My proposal was to take the site and bring it up to grade.
Architect Michael Arad and his team have brought the ground back to street level, adding two massive reflecting pools in the tower's footprints.
Well, I think it comes to life with the water.
Underneath this memorial is a museum.
The museum will be telling the story of the what happened, the why, and what does it mean.
This native New Yorker vividly remembers 9/11.
Especially when the buildings came down, that was like one of the most hurtful things. You know, it hurt deep.
This local kid talks about his family's response to the attacks.
My parents did donate and, like, they tried to help out.
And he remembers what happened next.
A bunch of people called me, like, Osama.
Both Muhammad Haq and Ayub Suleiman.
I do feel a little bit of discrimination.
Are Muslim. They survived the unimaginable.
It was like thunder in the house.
And it sounded like a train coming through.
All you could hear was bam, bam, bam.
People were crying. There was kids screaming. And
scariest thing I ever seen.
These are not survivors of the 9/11 attacks, but of the May 22nd tornado that tore through Joplin, Missouri.
And there's nothing there. It's gone. I was in tears.
But the experiences are so similar.
We're going to take the flag to Joplin, Missouri, and we're going to let the whole town of Joplin stitch the flag on 9/11.
The torn American flag was recovered from ground zero. Jeff Parnes, who lost a friend and business partner in the attacks, has taken battered Old Glory around the country for repairs.
Soldiers and school kids who survived the shooting at Fort Hood, Texas, have sewn this flag. Mm-hmm. World War II veterans on the deck of the USS Missouri in Pearl Harbor on Pearl Harbor Day sewed this flag. Martin Luther King's family sewed this flag. This flag is really knitting together the fabric of the country.
The Osgood File. This is Charles Osgood. The cliche about American attitudes towards taxation is this: don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the fellow behind the tree. It is clear now that the government must not only reduce spending, but also increase revenues, which raises new questions as to how many taxpayers can fit behind a tree and how many trees we're talking about.
Not just another story. Better late than never can ring kind of hollow when the subject is the honor due a World War II veteran, and late being at the age of 93. Army Captain Tom Harrison likes to talk about the day he met General Douglas MacArthur. He doesn't spend much time talking about the months fighting pitched battles against the Japanese at the Battle of Bataan, or what it was like when American and Filipino troops surrendered there.
Reporter's Notebook.
This is Bob Schieffer. After watching Congress flounder around for an entire year and manage to accomplish nothing, I've come up with my own reform plan. Just create a second Congress. Members of this Congress would be elected for 1 year and barred from ever running again. Since no one would have to worry about re-election, they could dive into the heavy lifting, entitlement reform, deficit reduction, tax policy, and rebuilding our roads and bridges and schools.
All better now. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Well, they say it's all fixed now, but for a while there, it was pretty scary.
Millions of BlackBerry users in the United States and Canada can't get their email or instant messages.
We're taking this situation extremely seriously, and we're doing everything we can to restore normal operation of our service.
It sits there in my pocket, my information rocket. My thumbs are getting fidgety, because God knows why my BlackBerry froze, and nobody's home.
I've had no communications for 2 days.
Like me. There's something about it going online, gets me feeling so fine, and I just gotta say, hey, it showed me how to write it to spell, it was working so well, why'd they take it away?
What did one BlackBerry user say to the other BlackBerry user? Nothing.
Oh, how I enjoyed it, writing memos in the toilet, oh, how it left me wild and free. And now God knows why my BlackBerry froze and nobody's home.
It's never cheating. It's really irritating.
Like me.
The timing for BlackBerry's troubles couldn't be worse. Its main competitor, Apple, is starting to sell its new iPhone.
That's right. Got to be in touch 24/7. Otherwise, how will we know we've been fired? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman, live at the Super Bowl in Arlington, Texas. And what a Super Bowl we are witnessing. Right now, a minute 59 left in the game, and the Green Bay Packers lead the Pittsburgh Steelers by just 6 points, 31-25.
It was miracle night here in St. Louis as the St. Louis Cardinals, on the verge of elimination, come back twice to tie the game, then win the game in the 11th. CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman, live at the Stanley Cup Final in Vancouver.
This is well worth the wait. 39 years.
The reaction of a Boston Bruin fan here in Vancouver as the Bruins, for the first time since 1972, are Stanley Cup champions. A group of maybe two, three dozen young men now rocking this vehicle back and forth. They're going to try to tip it over, I guess. There are fires in front of me. Black smoke in the air right now. Not a pretty scene here in Vancouver.
The Scots made the rules of golf in 1744. One rule involves putting on the green. Say the wind moves the ball and it doesn't return to the original spot.
There's a one-shot penalty and you must replace the ball then to the original spot.
That has cost a bunch of pros, including Webb Simpson, playing in New Orleans this year, leading late in the tournament, and
he goes to tap in his par putt and the ball moves. A one-shot penalty.
Stupid rule, said Simpson, who lost the tournament. Now, the rulemakers say there'll be no penalty if the wind interferes, and you can smooth the sand before you play a bunker shot. Too big, and some say overdue changes that might make a difference.
It's in the hole!
Dave Barrett, CBS News.
Oh, one, two.
Dancers' feet squeak in circles.
Five, six.
Arms and legs move in sync. The Radio City Music Hall Rockettes rehearse for Linda Haberman.
A five, six, seven. Uh-huh.
A tall, lithe figure with a surprisingly commanding voice.
Let's go once more from the top.
Since 2006, she's directed the Radio City Christmas Spectacular in New York, a nearly 80-year tradition.
The show does have a legacy, and that's very important to me. I think it's important to retain certain elements of the show that people have come to love and expect. But I also think part of my job is continually to trying to make the show relevant to today and move the Rockettes forward as a dance company.
It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. We are delighted to spend a little bit of your weekend with you. I'm Jill Schlesinger, and this is the program that takes the mystery out of your finances, helps you take control.
CBS News, I'm Vicki Barker in Cairo.
President Mohammed Hosni Mubarak has decided to waive the office of the President of the Republic.
The scream they heard around the world, the moment hundreds of thousands of Egyptians in Liberation Square realized they had won. 18 days of people power toppling one of the Middle East's most entrenched police states. CBS's Harry Smith was in Tahrir Square.
Now they've achieved their goal, and the feeling here is almost disbelief. A man I was talking to who spoke some English heard me in conversation with someone, came over and kissed me, and he said, thank you, thank you, thank you.
But any thank yous owed to the people themselves who fanned the flames of a nonviolent revolution begun on Facebook and Twitter, Mubarak handing over to the military, but CBS's Elizabeth Palmer says the military prepared to honor its promise to be temporary caretakers.
The commander of the Air Force said the council says it will not be an alternative to the legitimacy that people strive for. So he appears to be reinforcing the message we heard from the Army all along, not only that they were protectors, but they were going to push forward to free and fair elections and to democracy.
Tonight, the streets of Cairo are going wild.
Tell all the world, if anybody in the world, you want to feel freedom, just go in Egypt. Go in Egypt right now. All these people feel freedom right now.
After 30 years ruled from above, Egyptians have pulled off a real live grassroots revolution. In a very real sense, we're listening to the birth of a nation here. I'm Vicki Barker in Cairo. Now Sam Litzinger has more.
President Obama says Egypt is facing a challenge, but he's confident the Egyptian people can handle it.
Egyptians have inspired us, and they've done so by putting the lie to the idea that justice is best gained through violence.
He says the United States is ready to help Egypt as it moves to strengthen its democracy. It's not just Egyptians in Cairo who are celebrating Mubarak's resignation. Many Egyptians around the world are, too. Allahu Akbar is the chant in New York City's Little Egypt section. God is great. This Egyptian man in Kissimmee, Florida, says now his people have a chance at what the American people have.
So exciting that another country can be like us here in the United States.
The White House will be watching closely to see what influence Egypt's largest opposition group, the Muslim Brotherhood, will have now. So long to a familiar face and voice at the White House. This is spokesman Robert Gibbs last day in the job. His boss stopped by the White House press room briefly to make sure reporters knew this was not the most important story of the day right now.
Obviously, Gibbs' departure is not the biggest one today.
Gibbs will take some time off, give some speeches. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up nearly 44 points. This is CBS News. The sentence for the man convicted of killing a Washington, D.C. intern, 60 years. WTOP reporter Neil Augenstein.
Before he was sentenced, Ingmar Gwandike turned to Chandra Levy's mother and said he was sorry for what happened to her daughter, but in his words, "I had nothing to do with it. I am innocent." During her victim impact statement, Susan Levy spoke directly to Ingmar Gwandike. She asked him, "How could you take my daughter's life? Look me in the eye." Gwandike didn't respond. Susan Levy cursed at Gwandike and sat down. The judge called Gwandike a danger to women and sentenced him to 60 years in prison. The earliest he could get out, he'd be 80 years old. The judge said by then, Gwandike would no longer be a danger to women.
Neil Augenstein. A recap, Egyptians are dancing in the streets of Cairo and Alexandria. In fact, all across the country now that President Hosni Mubarak has resigned and given the military control. President Obama says America wants to remain a strong ally. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.